Where am I talking about condoms? What is with you? What?
Dylan is you doing see, it's some not, emotional distancing at the moment.
He's off the reservation. Really.
It's not funny if you have to explain the joke. See, Cooper, you said we need to wrap up soon.
That was probably one of your worst.
Total non sequitur, but I actually read a text from last night about some guy who got lucky because he was wearing a fanny pack full of condoms and found a woman who was impressed by that. So,
wow,
my occasional guilty pleasure, but yeah, a fanny pack full of condoms, sure.
Well, so that's a way into someone's heart, gentlemen.
I don't think he was aiming for her heart, but maybe. Welcome to the Swing Set. Climb on up. There is always a swing available. On Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, we explore ethically non-monogamous relationships, the pleasures and passions, the promise and pitfalls. We discuss all aspects of ethical non-monogamy in a fun, open, and welcoming fashion, with a gleam in our eye, a bounce in our step, our hands down your pants. Ooh, sorry, got ahead of myself. We may be biased. In fact, we most certainly are. But we don't sugarcoat, and each of us speaks honestly and earnestly about our thoughts, ideas, and experiences throughout our very own Lives on the Swing Set. Thanks for swinging by.
So, Life on the Swing Set is going to Desire this November from the 3rd through the 10th, and it is going to fucking rock. And you all should come with us. Ginger, tell us how awesome Desire is.
Desire is so fantastic. It really is truly paradise. It is not to be missed. You absolutely will be there with all of us, with great, great friends that you haven't even met yet. So you absolutely must join us.
And one of the cool things about our group is we have a wide range of people going with a wide range of experience levels, from nudists to poly folk to swingers, first times going to a resort like this, to veterans like, say, Ginger and the Prof, who've been there plenty of times. But I wouldn't say plenty, because I don't think there is such a thing as plenty.
There's not such a thing. We've decided that we need to be one of the people who've, quote-unquote, lost track. And they're there. We meet them every time in Hot Tub Happy Hour. We want to be one of the lost trackers.
And we are going to do a whole bunch of things to get you mingling with other people, so you don't have to worry about, will I be able to meet anyone? Will I have anyone to hang out with? We're going to have dinners. We're going to have games. We're going to have seminars, including sex toy demonstrations and pole dancing demonstrations. Now, I'm mentioning this now because there's a little bit of a time constraint. Our lower price rooms, starting at $360 per night per couple, the Garden View rooms, are only on sale at that price until May 7th. So if you're thinking about it and you're on the fence, now is the time to contact Char Travel. Tell them you want to join Life on the Swing Set in Desire. You can email them at info@chartravel.com or give them a call at 215-321-4451.
So don't miss your chance to spend a week with Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, in paradise. Go to lifeontheswingset.com/desire.
It is always by way of pain that one arrives at pleasure, words spoken by the Grand Master of Kink, the Marquis de Sade himself. We've discussed kinky stuff here and there, but realized we never went too deep, and so tonight we are going to hit on the subject of hard kink, of S&M and the derivatives within. I'm Cooper, and tonight I have with me...
Hey everybody, it's Ginger.
Hey guys, it's Dylan.
This is Shira B. Katz.
And we are pleased to be rejoined by Peppermint. Welcome, Pepper.
Hello there, guys.
Hi.
We've missed you since the last time you were on.
Yes, we have.
It's been a long time.
It has.
The thing is, it feels really long because so much has happened since the last time you were on. So it's not even just the time. It's just...
Right. There's all this poly dating going
on. Yeah, did you hear that Shira infected us all with poly?
You know, it's the bug.
I don't know. I gotta credit the larger group a little more than
it's
just
going around
Shira, but you know,
it's going around.
this poly thing, it's going around. So before we get going, does anybody have any business here tonight? I have teensy business.
I have business too, but it it leads us into the topic. So I'm going to
you can go
the right
second.
To go last or whatever.
Or last.
Yeah. Or last.
Or both.
Because someone might come up with business in the meantime.
I have teensy business. While we are recording right now, Marilyn is on a date that is going to be a sleepover.
Oh, wow.
So she is not coming home tonight.
How do you feel about that?
I feel fine about that.
Oh, Cooper, okay. Do you need me to come over later and snuggle with you?
I'd rather you not.
Okay. Because, you know, I'll come over and snuggle with you if you want.
I know you would, and I appreciate that very much, but I'm not interested in that right now.
That was a very smooth rejection.
Well, thank you.
And well taken on Dylan's part, actually.
See, there's that is an example of how to give and receive rejection. It's a little playlet from Life on the Swings at the podcast.
There you go.
So, Ginger, you have some business.
Yes. Well, I finished, since it seems to be what everyone is reading these days, I finished...
Harry Potter? The Hunger Games? The Hunger Games.
Close. No.
Close?
Not really. A little bit racier. 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh. The grown-up Hunger Games.
I don't know about that, but I suppose it's got a little, I don't know where to go with that.
Well, it's funny because I've heard a bunch of people talking about this 50 Shades of Grey. It's one of those things where I didn't hear anything about it, and then just suddenly it's popping up on Facebook statuses, and people are mentioning it, and I've been told it's mommy porn. What do you feel? What do you think about
that?
What
does that mean?
Mommy porn is what the straights, and I'm using air quotes, read when they're in the bath, you know, for a little excitement at the end of a long day.
Don't like this term.
I don't like the term either. There was some discussion about the term treating it, you know. When you're talking about mothers doing something, it's like you always have to qualify it with mother in the beginning because they're not real people or real women after they become mothers. They're just mothers at some point. So mommy porn is intimately different than, you know, regular female targeted porn because it's for moms who are all repressed and never having sex anymore and dreaming of a better life. And it's like, well, that's crap. It should just be, I mean, you know, if you want to target people that happen to have a nice suburban life, okay, but just classifying it as mommy porn, it's kind of a crappy way to say it.
Well.
Well, given that that's what people are saying, if they're calling it
that
mommy
is what
porn.
People are saying, and I just relate it. So I'm going to say kiss my ass, Dylan.
Hey, I have a mommy dildo right here for Ginger.
Thank you. Hey. I love that you come prepared to podcast.
Always.
With that said, I will say it's more mainstream. And I think that's what makes it a little different is there's all the more tame, I guess, erotica where you can get away with reading it on the beach or, you know, in proper company. And then there's other erotica that you keep in the nightstand and, you know, maybe pull that out when you're by yourself or with a lover. But this is interesting because the relationship in the novel / erotica is of a DS nature, of a dominance and submission, and a dominant man introducing the concept of submission to a lover. And so that, I believe, is what is all the buzz is about, is that that really is a big part of their relationship. And they're very descriptive, albeit way too short, scenes within the book that describe playing in the sense of being in a playroom with implements and very much a description of him introducing the idea of submitting to him and in more depth with more of a contract being introduced and more pain play as a part of all of it. And so that is the difference, is that that really is front and center, and it's a more mainstream. I mean, like you've said, it's popping up on people's Facebook statuses and such, so they're not being shy about reading it. So,
I think it's the modern day Thornbirds.
Well, I'm interested from the perspective of the fact that it is so mainstream and that the kink is so front and center in it, you know, what people's impressions are of the fact that kink is right there front and center on all kinds of websites, on, you know, just the mainstream. It's there.
Well, I feel like we're definitely seeing a moment around this, right? Like, you know, it's on, I don't know which bestseller list, but it's on some bestseller lists. It's been getting a lot of play in the media in both directions, right? Like some people being like, oh, great, look at this, you know, hot mainstream kink romance. And other people saying, oh my God, women are being demeaned, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so it's been a, it's clearly done, you know, broken into the mainstream, I guess. And so I think we're seeing a moment in that sense. I still probably won't read it, though. it might be, you know.
I will tell you that my perspective was very much curious because I have, I have to use the term vanilla girlfriends reading it who are just like, oh my gosh, can you believe? And I had to know what they were talking about. And then I realized their shock and it's not really outrage at all. Like they're very much treading lightly around the concept of not wanting fantasies censored. Mm-hmm. It's still controlling female sexuality, whether you're censoring it in a benevolently sexist way or not. But I wanted to know what they thought was so scandalous. And so then when I did read it, I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Now that gives me a little bit of perspective on what might be considered scandalous to them.
It's an interesting, you know, you wonder why it's suddenly so popular. It's because, you know, it seems to me that it since you said that the sex scenes are very short, that's the difference between it being classified as erotica and it being classified as a romantic novel. Or you have people finally having an excuse to read erotica without having to read the book that says erotica and has nudity on the cover. You know, that's why they want to read it.
Well,
that's why they're talking about it.
I feel like that's been happening for a while. I mean, if you've ever picked up some Laura K. Hamilton, right? It's all about, oh.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Vampires and werewolves and sexy, sexy things. I'm sorry. I got excited.
You can talk about it. You seem excited.
No, so here's the deal with the Laurel K. Hamilton books. If you start at the very beginning of her Anita Blake series, they're crime novels and they're mystery novels. And I think she's done like one a year for something like 15, 20 years, like a really long time. And you can, it's amusing because the fashion and everything kind of goes the way of the times, even though only like 2 years have passed in the book's time frame. It's very funny. Anyhow, it starts off really like mystery, but then like over the years, it slowly gets skankier and skankier and skankier until now she's just got like, she has like five werewolf boyfriends and like another half a dozen vampire boyfriends, and there's group sex all over the place, and it's it's really gotten very salacious and awesome.
But it's vampires and werewolves, and they can do that kind of thing. We humans really should refrain. I mean, that's just way too naughty.
But well, my point was that you can read Laurel, like the covers aren't that bad. You can read Laurel K. Hamilton on the train, though I guess at this point everyone knows what you're reading. But
yeah,
just from
right?
The title.
I'd be a little embarrassed.
But there are sort of books out there like that, certainly in the, you know, modern fantasies genre.
Yeah, you can buy Laurel K. Hamilton's books in the grocery store at like my local grocery store. They will be there.
But what I was more saying is this is like an entry to an exclusive club for some people. It's a non-threatening way to explore something that they might have vague thoughts about but don't understand. It's
right.
A connection with those other people who have also read it, because you can give them that look. If you see them with it, you can be like, oh, yeah, I know. We got this thing in common. It's kind of kinky. Aren't we progressive? I really think that a lot of this is just, it's people wanting to explore more in the, I'm going to use air quotes, aberrant sexuality realms, and seeing this as their gateway drug that probably won't go anywhere, but it's a safe way to explore it for them.
I think you're right about it being a safe way because it's mainstream, and of course everybody has to read it, so they mm-hmm. know what everyone else is talking about. I was more surprised by how detailed it was, in the sense that they were talking about not just the kinky practices, but the kinky practices within the kinky structure of talking about negotiating a contract, and not just the, oh, you know, arms over my head, cuffed, getting flogged, but this is our negotiation of our relationship in a very structured DS relationship. And that's what surprised me. It wasn't mm-hmm. as much of the erotic component, because I've read bits and pieces of that in various sort of mainstream erotica, but this takes it even deeper into the kink, where I wonder what people are doing with that when they're reading literally a contract, which is a familiar thing if that is part of your sexual world, that you enter into a negotiation and you create a contract for what your relationship looks like. And I wonder if people reading that in more mainstream and not having that part of their sexuality are wondering, what the heck? This guy just drew up a contract, and is that normal? And what is it? And so I was surprised at how kinky it got into not just the sensation aspects or the dominance and submission, but the actual day-to-day, what it looks like to dive into a kink relationship sort of aspects. That surprised me.
Do you feel like the author had actually spent a good deal of time in BDSM or kink communities?
That's a great question. It was hard for me to tell specifically. I mean, there were certainly parts that rang very true, and there were certainly parts that those were more kind of the gut sort of instinct feeling of how she wrote the Dom character. But there are certainly big parts of it that you could just glean from the internet that, oh, this must be what a relationship would look like. But certain parts of it, you know, in certain language around the Dom talking about ownership and just different things like that rang true from a more mental, emotional perspective. But it was hard for me to tell, I guess, is the answer to that question.
Okay, yeah, I've read some criticisms that were basically like, well, it was a little off, you know, we're not quite sure. Or maybe a little too fantasy, you know, like the sex is always perfect.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I have my kinky sex, it's not perfect. It's messy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it was. It was very much a, you know, the bodice ripper sort of perfect sex. And, you know, it lasted like 2.5 minutes because you read it and you need to get through it or whatever to continue on with the story. I don't know. But, yeah, it definitely, those components certainly didn't ring true in that sense. And definitely it felt very much like you said, like the window dressing aspect in that way. But it did, like I said, go deeper into contracts and talking more. There was jargon in it that surprised me.
Okay.
So that I was like, oh, but again, something that you could maybe just glean off the internet and ask a few choice questions of choice people and be able to write what she did write. So. But I'd love to just use this book in the mainstream as that jumping off point to go into the bigger concept of kink and what that looks like in people's lives.
Ginger, I love it when you segue.
Thank you. Oh, my gosh. And I love it when you call it out.
Oh, I'm all about pointing things out.
Okay.
You know, then it won't be like, oh, you know, that was an interesting segue. It's like, oh, see, if I mention it, then it's something else altogether.
I just want to know what a segue has to do with all this.
Wow. Wow. So, hard kink. Now, Pepper, You are the impetus behind this show.
Right. Should I tell the audience why?
Sure. The show is happening? Yeah. Well, I was talking to you online, and you're like, what the hell? You're talking about kink, but you're not dealing with anything really exciting. And I'm like, whoa, I'm not that kinky. And then I said, maybe you should do it. Something like that, right?
Something like that. I think you're perhaps exaggerating our
it was perhaps less confrontational.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was listening to the episode and I was like, oh boy, a kink episode, right? And I listened through it and I was like, okay, none of those were my kinky activities right there. And that's fine, right? Like, I don't know, I was writing down notes for this episode and I was sitting there thinking, wow, I'm gonna sound like I'm really boasting here, and that's not the goal, right? Like, everyone sort of has their kinks. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their kinks, and that's
except
good.
Dylan, because he claims not to.
Except for Dylan,
I gave up on that, and more importantly, I'm willing to explore some pretty interesting kinks. I just gotta find the right people. That's all.
I think I've seen some of that exploration, in fact. I don't want there to be like, oh, this is more hard or more extreme or something like that, like SM or kink, right? Like, there are things I absolutely don't do, like contracts for DS relationships, for example. I haven't even come close to that shit.
I've actually never heard of this contract for a DS relationship thing. Is it an actual contract, or is it just a discussion?
It's a discussion on paper. So certain people who do DS like to sort of do DS in the whole relationship, or have it long term, or not have to renegotiate it often. And so, to make this more clear, often they write things down. Not all that different from poly people who are starting out and they make rules and they write down all their rules, right? Because if you don't write down the rules, someone's going to misinterpret something. But having it on paper really helps get it out. And so, for example, often you will have submissives who want to be submissive to a person, but then at the beginning of each date, they don't want to have to, like, renegotiate where their submission is. They want to have it set, right? At the beginning of the date, like, this is what you have of me,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to have to talk about it because that breaks me out of the submissive space. So there's a certain amount of planning ahead, I guess, and that's where this sort of thing comes in. And again, I don't do much of this myself. Like, I've done DS in the bedroom kind of stuff, but we always end up negotiating at the beginning of the date, in fact. So I haven't reached that sort of level. I do a lot of fairly painful stuff, I guess. It's an easy way to say it. I have all these fun jokes, like, you know, I'll be at the dentist's office and the dentist will be cleaning my teeth and it'll hurt. And I'll be like, oh, it could be worse. I could be having sex.
So for the fairly painful stuff, are you the giver or the receiver?
Usually I'm the giver. Okay. Someone asked me my toppy level recently, and I was like, oh, okay, 80% top, about. Certainly.
Does it take a specific kind of person to make you the bottom, or is it today I feel like this?
Strangely, it ends up being person by person. But it's not that it's a specific sort of person, it's that there's a specific dynamic between the two of us. Like, if I'm with, mostly I date women these days, right? If I'm with a woman who is kind of toppy, then I'll often figure out bottoming to her. And I have a regular lover of 4 years who, it's still like every date I bottom to her. And that's just because that's sort of what she needs, and that's sort of what I need with her, and it makes sense between the two of us. But my other girlfriends and lovers, I only top, pretty much. And then for each of them, it's like, I top them and I offer, hey, I'll switch, you know, let's change it up, do something different. They're like, no. But yeah, do you want the rundown of some favorite activities?
I do.
Well, no. I'd really like to know when you go in and say, okay, I'm going to top for you today. What does that mean for you?
Well, one of my favorite things, which I think some of you know, is whips. right? Mm-hmm. Like, so people talk about whips and chains. These are the actual whips, like the kind you see in the movies. though I guess not the, it's funny, in the movies they always have like terrible metal things at the end of them. And then there's your hero and he's all strapped up on some kind of thing because he's being punished. And the executioner or whoever who's whipping him like gouges some huge hole out of his back.
Wait a minute, whips. I saw that movie. Mel Gibson directed it.
You know, there's a number of them. Actually, pretty much any whipping scene in a movie looks like this. It's some guy up on, strangely, a cross or framework.
Yes.
Getting, you know, his back torn to shreds, right? It's not like that.
Good to know.
The whips I play with are actually made for play. And so they don't have terrible metal things on the end, and they, you know, they just hurt a bit. That's all. It's hard to describe the sensation. It's like small lines of fire, vicious bug bites. I don't know. I don't know if I've tried to put it into words on a podcast before. So that's one thing.
I think, I you know, if I'm thinking about the sensation of being hit by a whip, I could only think of one word. It has to be stinging.
Yes, it definitely stings. So do y'all?
But
know,
in very precise places.
Yes, that's very true.
Interesting.
You mean like the hit area is very small?
Right. So like the hits don't come very often, and when they do come, they're pretty powerful and strong and very, very stingy. And you're surprised because you can tell how small of a spot has been hit and how much sensation is coming from that one spot, you know?
Right, it's really concentrated.
Totally.
Yeah, it raises these tiny little welts too.
So you enjoy giving the welts and the red marks, but do you get into the bruising and the harder stuff that, you know, includes the paddles and things like that?
Yeah.
You are amongst friends, Pepper. You do not have to worry about.
Oh no,
it.
I won't be shy.
It's okay. I've been chest up against a couple of them lately. So
listen to the excitement in Dylan's voice.
I know.
He gets this way every episode where we talk about something that's outside his comfort zone.
Well, his
because
excitement
he clearly is dying to reach that comfort zone.
His excitement,
I don't know what you're
makes
talking
me
about
excited. Fun times. So yeah, actually, paddles are one of my favorite things ever. Like, pretty much when I have SM with sex, there's a paddle. Like, when my small bag, when I take the tiniest bag that I take to play parties, it has a paddle in it and the whip. And that's pretty much it. Paddles have a lot more weight to them. They're not the same sort of concentrated hit. They're spread out over an area. And they, something I like to tell people is that, you know, I'll pick up the paddle and I'll show it to them and I'll say, this implement was specifically made to cause tons of pain without, you know, hurting you permanently or maiming you, right? And it works. Mm. It's well made for that purpose. So yeah, it's funny, like, I don't know, like fraternities use paddles for hazing and stuff like that. And when you go to Burning Man, like sometimes you'll just walk into a tent and someone will be like paddling for drinks and they'll be swinging around this solid piece of wood. And I have walked into that tent and said, no, and walked right back out again.
That's not a paddle. This is a paddle.
Well, no, because it'll hurt too much, right? Because they don't know what they're doing. They're just sort of swinging around. So they're sort of temperamental, I guess.
I didn't know they still used paddles for hazing. I thought that was just something out of a Laurel and Hardy movie.
You know, as of 15 years ago when I was in college, I'm pretty sure.
You were hazed with a paddle?
No, I didn't do the fraternity thing, but I'm pretty sure there was some hazing going on with paddles at that campus.
I have a feeling a lot of hazing has its roots in a lot of fetish stuff and a lot of pain play. It's a lot of sexual innuendo going on with that stuff. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, like a loud homoeroticism kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that it's that kind of eroticism that's weird. It's that people who are regularly normal are willing to both give and take this on a regular basis without actually exploring the fun side of it. You know, it's like, oh, I just like to hurt people, but not in a sexual way or anything. That'd be sick.
To them, that might be fun.
Well, there's this whole sort of kink subculture called Spankos, or like the spanking groups and stuff like this. I'm not kidding.
they chose that name.
Yeah.
I think we have a couple of fans who are pretty
really
into it. Yeah,
it's like a kinky breakfast cereal.
I get contacted a lot by spanking enthusiasts, and I think it's because of that show. I think it was like episode 50 or something.
Where you talked about liking to be spanked?
Where I was talking about getting a pretty thorough spanking.
Yes.
And I think that brought some new listeners.
You got some extra fans from that episode?
I really think so.
Yeah.
And that crowd is like, spanking is their thing. That's what they do. You know, it's like not any of the rest of SM, but spanking and perhaps some paddling. I don't know. But like the hand on the ass is very important.
Do you find that the SM culture is sort of, you find your little niche in it, and that's where you're not necessarily you, the metaphorical you, where the kink lies is in this little piece of it, or are most people exploratory in that they will try a little of this, try a little of that, try a little of this, try a little of that?
I feel like it's pretty much the latter, actually. Like, most people I've met seem to be like, oh, well, I'm into A, B, and C, but not D, E, and F. Like, I don't do role play myself. People get dressed up in uniforms and stuff, and I'm like, that's nice. Nice uniform. does nothing, right? And some people are really into rope, and I haven't managed to get into it, despite trying. And they will often not be into a lot of other stuff. Or maybe they will. Maybe they'll be into, like, rope and, I don't know, certain types of sensation play and caging.
Are you not into rope because you're not into restraints?
Oh, no, I love restraints. well, so my main thing is SM, right? So I want to get to the hurting. And sometimes I want to tie people up to get to the hurting, but I don't want it to take a while. And I never got good enough at rope, so it's quick. So I'll use other things.
No, ropes really are a long game.
Well, you can do quick things with rope, but you have to know what you're doing, which I don't.
Right. Life on the Swing Set has to take a quick break. When we come back, we will be talking about scary stuff.
Hey, Cooper, guess what?
What's that, Shira?
I just found the most amazingly sex-positive, eco-friendly, progressive, female-run sex shop.
Oh, really? This place sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Shira B. Cat stamp of approval?
They have the cutest name. They're called Smitten Kitten. Their brick-and-mortar store is located in Minneapolis, and their online shop is located at www.smittenkittenonline.com. They specialize in high-quality sex toys and equipment for people of all genders and sexual orientations. Handmade, one-of-a-kind items, non-toxic, medical-grade toys, educational books and DVDs, and even ethically produced porn on demand.
Oh, Shira.
What?
Get with the times! Everybody knows about Smitten Kitten Online. In fact, Life on the Swing Set has partnered with Smitten Kitten to give all of our listeners a 10% discount when they buy items from their online store. All our listeners have to do is enter the code SWINGSET at checkout, and boom! Discount.
No way. I can use it too? They have the super hot harness I got my eye on.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to smittenkittenonline.com and use the product code SWINGSET. Not only will you get 10% off your purchase, but you'll also be supporting one of the most progressive and sex-positive businesses in the industry.
All right, Cooper, I'm on it. www.smittenkittenonline.com. Discount code SWINGSET.
You'll be glad you came.
Hey there, SWINGSET fans. In the podcasting world, ranking high on iTunes can mean the difference between some listeners and lots of listeners. Do us a favor and hop onto iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and submit a 1-2 sentence review. It'll take a few minutes, but it'll help us spread the word. If you're on a mobile device and want to listen to any of our episodes on demand, search for and download Stitcher, and our entire library will be available at your fingertips. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. Miss Shirby Katz is dying to hear about the scary stuff. The hard kink. So we should probably define hard kink.
Or let me ask you, Shira, what is the scary stuff that we're headed for? I mean, I was going to pull out needles. That's pretty scary.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about needles. I was gonna talk about
and we lose half the audience on needles.
That was me right there.
I thought that would be a good one. I was also thought maybe we could talk about the like body fluids and other stuff, things that people don't normally associate right away with dungeons or BDSM, and might be surprised by when they see it. Okay. Fisting, things like this, big deal stuff.
Okay, yeah, so stuff that's hard, but not necessarily like obvious SM, maybe.
Is that not obvious SM?
Fisting?
Fisting isn't, right? Like, you know,
I have never considered fisting an SM thing when I've heard people talking about it or wanting it.
Well, when I do it, it usually hurts.
I only ever
well,
see
yes,
it
but,
SM.
But I imagine that's part of your goal. See, if I were to do it, I would be trying to minimize the pain as much as possible. See, so
right.
So I would be going specifically for that G-spot pleasure thing that I know comes with fisting. And I imagine there are ways to do it completely differently that goes for the pain. I guess that's why I don't consider fisting directly part of S&M.
Well, but we're talking about that. Let's talk about it. I mean, you know, certain sexual acts can be done more intensely and more painful, like fisting or anal, mm-hmm. right? You know, you use like sort of a minimal amount of lube. You start kind of quick. Ouch.
Yeah, ouch.
Ouch. We all know that.
It's funny. I think I always associated fisting with BDSM because I only ever see it at dungeons.
Well, where else are you going to see it?
I don't know.
You don't go to sex parties much, first of all.
Or differently,
non-dungeon play parties.
I
don't see it. I mean, you're right. I don't see it at like... I mean, actually, I don't see it often, period. Really. Sorry.
I don't consider it a part of SM just because I don't think pain is an integral part of the experience, I guess. I mean, yes, you can do it painfully, like you were mentioning earlier, but my guess is most of the people into fisting aren't in it for the pain. They're in it for the, well, that fisting feeling. That good old-fashioned fisting feeling that I just haven't gotten to yet. You know?
Well, but it's
a commercial for fisting right there.
You know, fisting is pretty stretchy, and in the process of getting a fist in, often there are hurdy parts to that process.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good way of saying that.
See, this is an interesting time for this discussion because I have been asked by a girl to fist her.
Oh, exciting.
It is exciting. And it's a little scary. But see, we've decided that the 11, the Enjoy 11, is an excellent warm-up act for it.
Yeah.
Because it's massive.
You need a super slippy lube. That can that can stick.
Bought
with
extra.
It. Yeah. Okay. And the thing I learned is that once you've got the fist sort of in the place where it's pretty wedged but not in mm-hmm. yet, the way you move forward is by wriggling, just light wriggling, like don't push too hard.
Okay.
And it seems to if you have the right woman, it goes right in, or the right man, or the right hole. Perhaps well, on a woman or
when,
man.
When she mentioned it, I said, you know, I have big hands. And she said, nah, I think we can do it. Okay.
She sounds like a good introduction.
I think so, too.
There are definitely people you can fist and people you can't fist.
Mm.
Right?
So the first time I went to a dungeon, one of the first times I went to the dungeon, I saw dual fisting, vaginal and anal simultaneous. And the other thing I saw, which totally blew my mind,
wow,
was
we're just
going to
gloss over dual anal and vaginal fisting?
Yeah,
no,
I'm just
going to
go
it
right
happens.
By that.
No worries.
It happens. I just want to get over to this other part.
Okay.
Okay.
Which totally blew my mind.
That one didn't blow your mind enough?
Well, there was things. The other thing...
I'm still impressed by double penetration. Double fisting is so far outside the realm of walking by and being like, oh, yeah, It was loud before it was cool, you know.
It was a very loud event. It was an all-female thing, and it was very loud. Both the giver and the receiver were quite impressed with themselves, and well, they should have been. But as I passed by there, I went into an area where I was offered to be pierced with needles, and I didn't even know that was a thing. Pepper, can you go into this?
What were they going to pierce?
Whatever I asked for.
Basically. Uh-huh. You name it. Okay, so needles.
Here is where I get the...
Right. Good. Yeah. Let's squick Cooper. This will be great.
Yes. This will be easy.
Go on. So needles are, in some ways, they're a different sort of SM. Like most of what I do in the bedroom is like punching, smacking, paddling, caning, like, and it all has a sort of very immediate, rowdy kind of feel to it.
I want to talk more about punching too, but
yeah,
needles
punching.
First.
It's good shit.
Every time I hear that, I keep thinking of New Jersey and like clubs and never mind.
And fist fights.
Well, yeah, that too.
But needles are very much like, you have to be careful with needles so you don't poke, so the person putting the needles in doesn't poke themselves, so you don't, you know, I don't know, get blood on the furniture and stuff like that. And also once the needles are in a person, they tend not to want to move around too much, as it turns out, because the needles move.
Explain what this looks like, because I don't think people understand what they're going to see when they think of needles being applied to someone.
Right. Well, so usually they're these inch and a half long needles, and you put them through the skin sideways. And the standard place is the chest area on men and women, because there's sort of a lot of good flat skin there. And so what you'll do is sort of grab the skin and slide the needle in sideways and then maybe poke it back out through the skin, and put a cork on it. Or I tend to go in and out a couple times with a particular needle myself.
Do you really? I haven't seen that before.
Well, there's two ways to cap the needle. One is to bring it back out of the skin and put a cork on it. The other one's to bring it back out of the skin and then put it back into the skin. And then you have it go piercing the skin three times.
You are a cruel bastard.
Yeah, well, and that's awesome. The point stays in the person, which is kind of hot, too.
Right. Yeah. And so when I've seen it, it's usually not just one of these things. Like, there's a few, like, lined up in pretty patterns and stuff.
Right. Well, and it depends on the person, right? So the reason to do needles is that it's actually one of the best endorphin-to-pain ratios out there. Like, they sort of hurt going in, but not much more than, like, getting a shot, right? But while they're in the body, people get this like huge endorphin rush. People get high. This is
wow.
Like drugs without drugs, right? Yeah.
That is fascinating.
Some people, and people have very different responses, right? So I was at this party one time and there was this woman there who wanted needles, and I put the first needle in her and she started shaking. And 5 minutes later, she stopped shaking, and I put a second one in her, and she started shaking. She was having these huge reactions, huge intense reactions. So I only got like 3 needles in her, and then I had to take them out because basically we, you know, ran out of time, as it were, and because I didn't want to push that reaction. So some people, like, you put a needle or two in them, and they just, like, fall over, and they're having a very intense time, and you don't want to put more in them. Other people, you can just sort of line them up. I had a needle off with a guy friend of mine at a party where I would put one in him and he put one in me, and I don't have a strong endorphin response, so I won that one.
I could just see two guys at a bar, you know. All right, your turn.
right Yeah, put that one close to the nipple.
I'm just picturing the two of them at a dive bar now. not a kink friendly environment. Just completely freaking everybody else out.
What are you doing?
So is the point of needle play, is the needle play the goal, or do you insert the needles and then do you move on to other things at the same time in general?
You can do other things. Most of the other things I do are sex.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you get the needles in the person, they're high, you do something sexual, they get off, you get off. It's hot because if they move at all, like they're poking themselves and things are moving under their skin and, you know, maybe starting to bleed a little, Yeah, good times. But yeah,
I think we scared everyone away. That, I told you it'd be scary.
That's right.
Guys.
That's right. Swing Set listenership drops by 50% after the needle episode. But you can move on and do other SM stuff, but because when people have the needles in them, they tend not to be want to be too rowdy. Like, they just sort of want to... It's very much like, I always compare it to opium dens. Like, there's just sort of people sitting around with the okay. needles in them. Often for a while, like...
That is a lot like an opium den, in fact.
Yeah, it has that feel to it.
Well, but with the needles and all.
There's that, I guess. Yeah.
Ha ha ha.
Oh, that was like that was like a Dylan joke.
I know.
Good job.
Let's
You're
talk
almost
about
as cool
else.
As me. Almost. So okay, we know needles really turn Cooper away a little bit. But I'm gonna tell you what kind of gets me. Bondage scares the hell out of me because I've always had this aversion to having my movement limited or not being able to get out. But at the same time, it also intrigues me because I wonder how I would react if I was tied up or restrained and not able to move. So when you restrict people, what do you do? How does it make them feel? How do you feel when you get tied up?
I haven't done much bottoming tied up myself. When I restrict people, it's usually for some other purpose, like to keep them from fighting back, for example.
Mm-hmm.
When people are doing like sort of rope bondage with the point of bondage, I think it tends to be more like they're getting the person in bondage so then they can fuck with them in some way, which I guess is what I'm doing. So, you know, in my case, it might be hit them with paddles, right? In someone else's case, it might be like, oh, you can't move. Now I'm going to have sex with you and you can't move and you can't do anything about it. And even though perhaps we negotiated this all in advance, we hope, you know, it's still really hot because you're totally at my mercy, and that's sort of the dynamic we're going for. And people, you know, I saw a scene recently where someone just tied someone up and they were kneeling and they just sort of pushed them over and they couldn't do anything about it. They just fell over. And then they sort of picked them up again and pushed them over again. And it's this feeling of helplessness that's, I think, very attractive for a lot of people. Perhaps you, Dylan.
Maybe. Maybe a little.
Perhaps really scary for you.
Well, it could be, and that's the thing. It's always made me wonder because that fear that I have of being restrained, I think might actually translate into something really, really interesting.
Right. There's a
and
lot of
I wonder
of,
if that's what people are looking for.
There's a lot of charge there. A lot of people, their kinks are specifically things they are afraid of because those carry an emotional charge, which then they can turn into a, you will either leave as an emotional charge and that's why they're doing it, or they turn into an erotic charge. But anyways, I've been talking a lot. I totally want to hear from y'all, like what things, well, Ginger's been quite quiet, for example.
Yes, she has.
What things have you gotten into?
Me specifically.
Yes, you specifically. I was just wondering if you were on mute, because not only are you quiet, but not even any giggling.
Well, it wasn't very giggle worthy. I felt as Pepper was going through with the needle play and you know, any kind of, I think of that as like precision play, whether it's a needle or a scalpel or, you know, anything that requires that much attention to detail is not within my experience. And it's very so when I hear you saying like rowdy, I can relate to. I can relate to rowdy a lot more than I can relate to the precision play. But I'm very intrigued by that different level of just that rush. And I think of it, Dylan, you talking about the bondage aspect. And I do think there's an element of beautifully managed fear that It's the oxymoron of safe fear. I had observed knife play in the past, and that was one of those just mind-blowing experiences. Again, I just observed it. And talk about, you know, really pushing that edge where, you know, we've talked in the past about, you know, being at a swinger party and how Prof and I are very, very careful about unleashing any kink in a group space because we don't know how it will be received often. And that's just what we deem appropriate in a group space at a swinger party. Never mind something like a scalpel or needles or knife play or something that really would blow people's minds. But knowing that it is giving your bottom or your sub or your play partner exactly what they want as that bottom or sub is really hot. And so I just listening to the precision play was just interesting to me because it just goes to a whole different place as opposed to, you know, Pepper, you saying like someone being, you know, trussed up, you know, bondage and then like pushing them over, or, you know, like Shira, you were talking about punching, or, you know, just more physical moving around the space sort of rough play.
Do you like punching?
I do very much. It's like,
yeah. What do you like? What do you like about it?
I mean, the hard part is I have a difficult time really isolating different practices like that because the experiences that I've had with Prof are very much just. You never know what you're going to get, which is what really turns me on. And so sometimes it's the burrow into your brain, very quiet whisper in the ear sort of dynamic. And sometimes it's that more rowdy piece. But what I love is you never know what you're going to get. So again, like going back to that precision play, like that wouldn't be something that necessarily works with our dynamic because it's just it doesn't allow you to really mix it up. And I think that that's what he does beautifully is he mixes it up and he's always three steps ahead of my brain, which of course is the beautiful thing that I don't have to think, he's doing it for me. And so when it comes to punching, I think it's not so much punching in the isolated experience, but it's punching in right at that moment, in that time, in that scene, exactly what I didn't really want, but now I really do. And so that's what's hard about it is I like it as a practice, but when I think of it in isolation, it's hard for me to think about what I like about it, but I'd love to hear what you like about it, Shira.
I too would love to hear what Shira.
Can I ask a more basic question really quick? I've never seen somebody punch someone else in this context. What does it look how do you decide when to punch someone or where do you punch someone like
I think
this?
Pepper should answer that.
Well,
yeah, there's,
you know,
very specific places obviously, and go
I punch
Pepper.
People
Let's
anytime
hear it.
Anytime I'm getting sexy with them, as I like to say, hurting people gives me an erection. So I have like one lover where we almost always start that way. Like we kiss and I punch her in the breasts and then we move on. Right. So places you can punch for, I'm going to say this actually for any of the listeners out there, we're talking about a lot of fun, interesting stuff. For many of these things, please take a class first. Needles, punching, or learn from someone who knows what they're doing. Maybe you don't take a class, but it is possible to hurt people these ways. Punching is one of those ones that's actually relatively easy to hurt someone. You want to generally punch on the rib cage. You avoid the sternum. You avoid the shoulder blades. You avoid the shoulders and the collarbone. That doesn't leave a lot of space, but anything in there is fair game. Like you can punch on the side on the ribs, or I punch women in the breasts fairly frequently. On the lower part of the body, you have to get below the waistline to avoid, you know, all those sensitive organs like your kidneys. Thighs are great. Backs of the thighs are great. I guess that's hamstrings. But you stay away from the knees and you stay away from the hip joints. Ass is great, of course. I've had a number of really hot ass punching scenes. I've had multiple women orgasm from ass punching. Good stuff.
Yeah.
How hard are you able to hit people?
If it depends on the person, actually, right? If the person I'm playing with is very small, like they're just not very tall, which means their bones aren't very heavy, I'll pull all my punches. And it also depends on where. Like if I'm hitting a very fleshy part, like the ass, I can go a lot harder than if I'm hitting someone in the ribs, for example.
And I would say, Dylan, part of your, maybe your question, for me, my experience, and as we kind of burrow into it a little bit, I'm thinking, what do I like? It's less pain and more impact for me. Punching is there certain practices that the pain is really delicious, like crop or particularly a crop, that the pain is the sexy part of it. For me, the sexy part of being flogged is the after flogging, feeling my skin hot all over. For me, punching is about the impact of it and not about the pain that a punch makes. It's not about like a focused, ow, that punch hurt me, I need to rub it. For me, it's more that heavy thud of an impact is really jolting and erotic and sexy. And you know, I've never punched anyone, so I don't know what it's like to give a punch, but it sounds to me, Pepper, like it's pretty hot.
Yeah.
I think it could be pretty hot. Like there's something specific about punching that I think is enjoyable, and I think part of it's the impact. I think there's a little bit of like you get shaken to a point,
yes,
that you don't normally get shaken. And, you know, Pepper mentioned something about ass punching. Now, it sounds fucking hilarious. It sounds like something that you would hear, what you would do on, like, South Park. But, like, bear with me for a second here. If you think about a woman's ass, and depending on how wide your hips are or how you're built specifically, there's some interesting parallels. So when you're getting fucked really hard, and a man is behind you and, you know, penis and vagina just getting regular fucked. His body is slamming up against your ass, like pretty hard. And that's moving your entire vulva, your pussy, and kind of pushing up against your cervix and your uterus in a way that I think, is really close to what punching feels like. Like very close to it. And because you're stimulating a lot of the things internally and you're being shaken, and it's not so much a pain thing, or at least it isn't when I'm being punched. I think I might have a high tolerance for pain, but it just is a sensation thing, and it's a very deep sensation.
Huh.
And now everyone's quiet.
I have to sidetrack real quickly. In a response to my tweet about being a little squicked out by needle play, we got a message from Spankin' Resource saying that he's a needle thrower and a hook suspension geek.
hook suspension should be talked about.
So,
oh, boy.
I thought I'd throw that out there because I thought you know, this group might appreciate it.
Hooks.
Clearly.
Okay, well, Oshir, I want to get something in real quick. So, a couple days ago, on day 8 of, oh my god, when will this sex stop? Because it's been a pretty insane week with Tonya. I had her just bent over normally on a couch. That's at perfect level for, you know, fun stuff. And I ended up bracing myself on one side of the couch with an arm. And then in the midst of everything, I just said, I'm going to go all in. And all in meant putting all of my weight on her. So I was balancing between my pelvis against hers and, you know, my cock inside of her, and my arm not bearing any weight, but just on the couch. And so my entire body was involved in pounding her, just like you were describing. and it was doing some pretty interesting things to Tonya. So I guess I kind of see what you mean.
I believe it. I totally believe
it. Yeah, absolutely.
But I'd like to hear about hook play, because I've never seen hook play other than in parody or movies.
I've seen it, and it scares me.
It scares me.
I've only done minimal amounts. I've never used hooks. I've pulled needles, which is in that direction. But I've seen a decent amount of hook play. It's basically just the next step up from needles, right? So a needle, it goes through the skin, it often comes back out, and then there's this chunk of skin. So you can, like, for example, tie the string around it and then pull it. And it sort of pulls the skin away from the body, which makes the person even more high, generally. And it's also just a very interesting and painful sensation. But not like sharp pain, I guess. Like, it's a, I don't know how to describe it. And so the next step up from pulling needles is, well, you actually just put sort of a higher gauge hook through the person's skin, not a barbed one, so you can take it back out, but not a hook without a barb, and you pull it. And, you know, I often see people sort of leaning, like they'll get like maybe four of these in them and then lean against the hooks and that, or away from the hooks, I guess, and that pulls their skin out. And then the next level above that is you use, you know, really huge gauge hooks and put them through their back in a number of places, and then you can lift them off the ground, which is a hook suspension, which I've never done or helped someone do even.
We got to get someone to talk about that, because I'm fascinated.
Well, Spankin Resource wants to come on our show, so
there
perfect.
There we go.
What is the sensation? I mean, I can't imagine what that feels like. Like, I can't begin to understand
it. Oh, I can't either.
I think the closest is if you pinch a piece of skin and pull it out as hard as you can. And I'm doing that right now.
Ooh.
To get that sensation.
Of course.
So am I.
Of course you are.
I am actually doing that.
Right. And that's sort of how it starts. And then you just do a lot of those. And it's a little bit more painful and probably burny because there's that thing in your skin. Too.
My gosh. Yeah.
So if we have a couple minutes.
We have a couple minutes.
I have lots of pictures in my head right now, and I was trying to imagine what having hooks in my back would feel like. And I just keep thinking about it.
Good times.
Not sure I like it, but
this is how it starts.
Well, I'm trying to translate my pain experiences, because I go, like you were saying, Shira, I feel like my pain tolerance is quite high, and I like to use that to my advantage to eke out every bit of pain Prof's willing to dish out. And I'm trying to translate that to the types of pain that I haven't experienced. And that is one, when I think about needle play or hooks or the hook suspension, that there is some huge, vast Grand Canyon crevasse between what I've experienced and that, for some reason, that I just can't even wrap my mind around it. I really can't.
Well, it might be psychological. Like, these things actually don't
Agreed.
Hurt that much. So if you've taken like a really hard paddling, for example, that hurts more than something like hook pulls. Like the
paddles are
oh,
a bitch.
Yeah.
which I can go to that place. And I agree with you, Pepper. I 100% believe that it's psychological, but I'm interested in what it is about that. What makes it different? Is it, you know, the fact that it's, I mean, you know, it's piercing your skin. Is it, I don't know what is different, because for me, you know, the pain is excellent. It's just, it's the practice that delivers the pain that I also eroticize. And that is one that intrigues me and makes me squirm, but is something that that's, like I said, really far from where my mind goes in terms of what I would want to try next, I guess. So I don't know what it, I mean, I certainly agree that it's psychological, but I'm just wondering what about that is different, since it's not the
whole
pain.
Putting things through people's bodies thing is a huge limit for a lot of folks, right? Like, you know, and then at the end you take the needles out and they tend to bleed a little. They're not big needles generally, so they don't bleed a lot. But, you know, there's blood. People seem to tend to associate that with, like, oh God, panic. Right? And it's just, it's the having things in the body. I have this thing, squick alert, here we go. I have this thing I've been doing recently where I ordered these 4-inch needles. They're nice and long, and I'll put them through women's breasts, not through the actual breast tissue itself, but sort of underneath, underneath the fat, underneath the skin through the fat layer. Yeah, there we go.
Oh,
hey, yes, finally, fucking I'm not the only one with the squicked out. I love
it. You pop them out the other side, and you put a little cork on them, right, and then you can feel them in there, right? And getting like a good half inch under the skin or so. It's like adding structure to the body almost in this weird way because they're metal and hard, right?
That's so fascinating. Humans are amazing. The things, the way that our brains work, the way that our chemicals are activated, it's fucking amazing. Like the variety of things that people are into. It's crazy. But yes, continue.
I don't know what else I had to say about that. It's nice. It's true.
I would like to hear about choking specifically, and maybe you can talk about face punching. Because I have a number of girlfriends who are surprisingly into it, and I don't understand it. Like, it sounds bad, like bad news.
Bad juju. let's talk about, well, I mean, I love hitting faces, but,
okay.
But it's tricky.
I need to unpack for me.
So yes, choking, please take a class. The classes are really hard to find. People are reluctant to even give the classes. But it is possible to make people pass out. It's possible to collapse their windpipes. It's not so good. I guess maybe start light, take it easy. Don't press too hard on that larynx. But yeah, there's sort of this good way to choke, which, or there's the way I choke, where I wrap my thumb around the windpipe and then push on the aorta, which is on the left side of a person's neck going up. And that creates the sensation of losing air, even though they can actually really mostly still breathe, right? And at the same time, you get a little dizzy because you're cutting off a little bit of the blood flow to the brain, just a bit. So it's a very, again, psychological kind of play. It doesn't hurt that much at all, actually. It's more of a DSE kind of play. But people will, you know, they'll go limp. It's a feeling of surrender to be choked, but it'll start gasping and twitching, which is kind of hot as well. And so anyways, that's what I do with it. Choking is, again, very psychological. It's like sometimes, for example, I will choke people and then they will come because of the psychological hit. Well, and often I'll be doing other things as well, but the psychological hit of being choked like kicks them right over the edge. Other choking experiences? Is it only me?
I haven't played that much with it, but I totally get the psychological part of it.
I tried very hard to listen to that, and I just...
Yeah, that's a hard one.
Wow.
Yeah, and...
But I get why people would like it. I
actually only like hands on my neck in very specific situations with very specific people, so I can get people really being like, oh, do not touch there.
Yeah, it's definitely something that it doesn't take much to have a lot of impact that way. Especially if there's a deeper dynamic involved, that just a hand on your neck, even if there's no pressure, but there's just a grip, can make a big impression. And so I just agree that, you know, when the trust is there and the dynamic is there, it can put you over that edge, and it doesn't have to be any kind of deeper. It can be, you know, choking or, you know, the breath play aspect of it, but not necessarily. It doesn't necessarily have to go there to create an impact, depending on what other psychological dynamic is going on, at least for me.
Yeah. And even just a light bit of pressure on the windpipe. Like, the thing about choking is keep it light. You are doing more than you think you are. Right? Like,
right.
Even a light bit of pressure on the windpipe, like, creates a huge psychological effect. It's like, oh, you know. Yeah. A fun breath play thing to do that people, I think, don't realize for some reason is to not choke at all, but, like, to close someone's nose with one hand and put your hand over their mouth with the other hand and then hold it shut. And, you know, after a while, they start twitching and gasping, but the jaw is strong enough that they can just gasp your hand right off to it, right off if they need to, right? You can actually breathe through someone's hand when they're doing that.
Right.
So it's a good safe way, because if they need to, they'll open their mouth and breathe, and the body will just start doing that eventually, right?
Whew.
Good times.
Yeah.
Oh, but very hot. Very, very hot. For me, at least.
I think a lot of the stuff that you've been talking about is a lot of fun, but I am so amused by all of my co-hosts at the moment. They're like, what did I sign up for?
Wait a minute, all of your co-hosts? I think Ginger is just fine, first of all.
Ginger's doing okay.
I don't think...
Just a little bit flushed, maybe.
I think okay. She's on the verge of an orgasm, hands-free, personally.
Oh, you know.
Yeah, Dylan was freaking out a little bit, but he's keeping it behind the scenes, so I appear to be the only one. It's cute.
It's cute. We still heart you, Dylan.
Sherry, you wanted to talk about people getting punched in the face.
Yeah, I actually
which
have...
I didn't know was a thing.
Yeah,
and don't punch people in the face mostly. I mean, I know wrestlers do it, for example, or boxers, right?
they do. Like,
but they also wear a significant amount of padding on the hands and the face, for example.
And it's their job.
And it's their job, right. And so, but in kink practice, so before I found, you know, BDSM, I had this girlfriend, and we would start sex by punching each other in the temples. And that was probably unwise. I would say if you're hitting someone in the face, don't punch. It's not so good.
Mm.
Also, the neck is really sensitive, and it can be like, and you can be fine most of the time, and then you just hit wrong, and you can mess something up in there. So it's important to brace the person's head. So like when I'm doing face slapping, I'll put one arm behind their head, and then hit them across the cheek and up into the temples with the other one.
You can get whiplash.
Right. I'm avoiding whiplash this way, because right. I'm cushioning the blow, much like a car seat. Has like the little headrest, right?
It's like a car seat. I just had an image of you as a car seat, so go on.
A car seat of love.
Yes, car seat of love.
Car seat of love, pain, and pleasure, really.
Yeah, and that way you avoid like the nose, the small bones around the eyes, the jaw, mostly, right? You know, you're not whacking them in the teeth or anything like that.
One of the reasons why I have such a, like, visceral reaction to hearing that, you know, whatever number of my female friends enjoy this for some reason, is I immediately go into the place of why. And I wonder if a lot of people, I wonder if maybe you should unpack also, you know, the tendency for people to correlate BDSM and, you know, prior trauma or something else or some sort of mental or emotional stuff.
Right. A history of abuse, people often.
Right.
That's the phrase people use. Well, so face slapping is very psychological. Absolutely. But it's psychological and direct. Like, we are very protective of our faces, as it turns out. So when someone's like smacks you in the face, it has this like direct psychological kick. I got smacked in the face last weekend and I was like, yep, there it is. Wow. So I think that's probably what's going on with your friends who are into this. And this is one of those things that a surprising number of mainstream people are going to be into. Oh yeah, you know, we have some sex. I get slapped in the face. It's no big deal. Right? And everyone else is like,
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, Pepper, your point that, you know, it has a very, you said, direct psychological kick. I think it's important to recognize that, you know, that's an equal opportunity employer. Like, regardless of your history, regardless of, you know, what people may say regarding different practices and past trauma and things being therapeutic or reliving or any of those things, that that experience can have, it can come from anywhere, and it's not related necessarily. For some people who coincidentally have that history, it may be there, but there's certainly it's just a very edge play experience to be slapped or hit in the face or any of these other practices, these, you know, hard kinks we've been talking about. And that to want to subject yourself to that for whatever it does to your body physiologically and chemically and hormonally and all that good stuff, that, you know, that's just something that some people are open to that experience and just want to see what it's like. And I think that for other people, and I'd be interested, Shira, in having conversations with every single one of those women or people and say, you know, what do you dig about that? Like, what turns you on? And my guess is you're going to get a lot of different answers. And it speaks to a different part of our psyche for every single one of us who enjoy that kind of, whether it's pain play or DS play or whatever that is. That there may be a theme throughout for certain people, but I think that it really burrows in deep into our brains in a different way for every single person, for every single experience.
I can totally see that. And I try not to be judgy. I really, really try. But there's just some things that I hear, it throws me off, and I'm still working on it, still working on opening my mind, I guess.
I think you are far down the road. I try not to be judgy, and then I spend an entire episode making S sounds. I try really hard not to be judgy.
I've met a number of people who specifically couldn't be into kink because they did have a history of abuse.
Sure, sure.
Right?
Sure.
Like it's like something when it was used against you in that way.
Right.
And I think context is super important, which is, I think, what you were getting at, Ginger.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a family abuse situation or something like that and someone slaps you in the face, it's very different than a lover slapping you in the face. Like, it feels different. It's done with different intensity. The purpose is different.
Right.
The meaning is different, right? It's all a different sort of thing. And so I don't think there's much, to get into Shira's question, I don't think there's actually much of a correlation between kink practice and a history of abuse. Like, there might be some people out there who are reclaiming, like, maybe they had a history of abuse and they're reclaiming it through kink practice, but they are more than offset by the number of people who had a history of abuse, and that prevents them from going anywhere near kink.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yay, thank you.
So we're going to wrap it up.
That's right.
And this terrifying episode's going to come to an end.
it hasn't been a terrifying episode. I just, because we're squicked out about some parts of this episode doesn't mean that it's terrifying. It's just pushing some of our personal boundaries.
Yeah, and I want to reiterate, like, just so we're not ending off in this weird, like, we feel funny now.
Cooper feels funny. And is okay with that.
Enjoyed this conversation, and I hope that our listeners who are interested in hearing more about this stuff do contact us, because
yes,
I would like to know what you want to see covered, and because everyone's busy having emotional reactions to the scary, sexy stuff that Pepper is talking about, we might be missing some stuff, so you guys should write in.
Hey, Cooper.
Yes.
You ever considered being fisted?
No.
Okay.
I've thought about it. I think if I had the right woman with the right hand, I could totally figure that out.
Hey, I've used the giant Enjoy 2.0 plug.
Right, so you're basically there.
But that doesn't have a wrist. See,
but
once
the wrist
that's
is good,
in,
the wrist is skinny.
Well, yeah, no. That thing is a nightmare and a half right there.
Uh-huh.
I'm very pleased that we've circled back around to fisting, because I don't think that we gave that its due justice. But anyway,
I was only asked once to fist somebody, and it was very, very, very early in my sexual career, and I haven't had the chance since.
Now that's a downer ending.
And then I found somebody, and it was great.
There you go. Now everybody's happy.
Oh, boy.
So, yes, please, as Shira said, let us know if there was anything that you wish we'd talked about, but we didn't. Anything you'd like us to talk about in the kink realm in future episodes. And we'd be happy to have Pepper back as a kink guru of sorts for us. And in the meantime, you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/theswingset. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm Swingset Life. We have Ginger N the Prof, Shira B. Katz, Dylan _Swingset, and Pepper is Freak Sexual. You can email us at contact@lifeontheswingset.com. You can give us a call, leave us a voicemail, send us a text, 573-55-SWING. That's 573-557-9464. So thank you, Pepper, for joining us.
And it's been wonderful.
I promise I won't. I won't avert my gaze when I see you because
I think I'll have some things to show you.
Now, see, you say that, and all I can hear is Pinhead saying, "I have wonderful things to show you."
Yeah, it's much like that, actually.
No. Pepper has a lot of very, very fun things.
I'm sure he does, and actually, see, Pepper, you are someone I would trust to show me things.
So. In fact, I think that what we should do on stage when we're all together is all four of us line up and kneel down, and
I'm out.
Get Pepper behind us. Give him one of his whips and one of his paddles, and then he gets to decide which one of us gets the paddle, and then what other three get the whip.
I have an alternate proposal. When we get there, Dylan will get down on his knees, and you can beat the shit out of him.
Well, we'll have a play party when you get out here. We'll figure out something exciting.
So thank you guys for the enlightening kink discussion. And thank you all for swinging by. When it comes to online dating, you at home have a lot of options available to you. But we here at Life on the Swing Set recommend Cassidy.com. We've tried many websites in the past, and while most are adequate and some are even pretty good, the one that we keep coming back to is Cassidy.com. And there are a few reasons for that. First of all, and most important to me, is ease of use. If you want to put a picture on your page, you know how to do it. It's intuitive, it's built in, it's Facebook for non-monogamy. Cassidy also has one of the most aggressive campaigns out there to get the most people all around the world onto the site. Right now, potential playmates are scattered throughout regional websites. Wouldn't it be awesome if they were all in one place so you could search one site and find absolutely everyone you were interested in playing with? Well, that's where the campaign for Cassidy comes in. Cassidy need not be your only site, but we recommend you give it a try. And if you sign up using the link on our page, you support Life on the Swing Set, so we can continue bringing you what's been called the best non-monogamy podcast out there. And if that's not incentive enough, if you join Cassidy, you get to see my wife's tits. How can you argue with that? Cassidy.com. Okay,
we're going to talk about squicking someone out. Me in front of a crowd of people getting hit. Oh my god.
Hey, you did it once.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
When?
It was at Burning Man, and you were you were whipping in front of everybody.
I was whipping. That's right. No one had to see my reaction. Right?
Fair enough.
There might have been some other time.
You're listening to a Swing Set podcast. Hear more at lifeontheswingset.com.